My guest at this time is former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton. He is now with the American Enterprise Institute. We've asked him to weigh in on the state of the 2016 presidential campaign, especially as it pertains to foreign policy, and some of the most difficult foreign policy challenges currently facing this country. And Mr. Ambassador, it's always good to have you with us. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me. Glad to be with you.
We're obviously getting down to crunch time on the Republican and Democratic sides. Just four candidates left for the Republicans, two for the Democrats. First of all, just in terms of the issue that led you to consider running in this year's campaign was making foreign policy and national security a major priority. How well or how poorly do you think, in general, the candidates are doing?
Well, I still think there's not enough discussion of the issue. There has been intermittently, I think, consideration of terrorism, how to deal with ISIS and the spreading threat of radical Islam. But, you know, the format of these debates, I don't really consider them debates myself. I consider them serial press conferences. And it's hard to talk about some of these issues. But that said, I still think that the moderator should be asking more questions about it, because the most important job of the president is to keep the country safe internationally. And we need to hear what the various candidates' views are. And I think particularly it's not just their views on what China is doing in the South China Sea that threatens us, or what Russia is doing in Eastern Europe that threatens us. It's how people think about these issues, because the next president is going to face threats and challenges that we can't even predict at the moment. So it's critical that people have a way of judging their character, really their integrity, their ability to deal with problems that overwhelm most people, that they cannot allow themselves to be overwhelmed. They have to think through it and protect the country. So you know, we're all now caught up in the political game, who's got this many delegates and who's ahead and who did well in the debate. But let's face it, when it gets to the general election, I think we're going to see a lot of these threats manifest themselves in the real world, as we saw in the 2014 election when ISIS began beheading Americans and people said, what is the president doing to protect us? It's going to happen, and certainly on the Republican side, I think we could use some more practice from the candidates who are still in the race.
What issues in particular? You mentioned you think there's been at least a decent number of questions on certain issues related to ISIS and the threat of radical Islam, but you mentioned that you think other areas not getting as much attention. Which specific issues do you wish there were more questions on, or at least deeper discussion on?
Well, I think, you know, we can all appreciate the immediate threats we face. We saw in the tragedy in San Bernardino, the attacks in Paris, other attacks from radical Islamists we've seen around the world. That terrorist threat is real, and people need to talk about what we're going to do to diminish it. And we have had conversation of what to do about ISIS. So there's no there's no blinking at the reality that in terms of threats today and tomorrow against the lives and safety of Americans and our friends around the world, terrorism's the most imminent threat we face. But there are larger strategic threats from China in East Asia, from Russia in East Europe, and others in this hemisphere, the Castro brothers, the mistakes that Obama's made in opening relations with them, possibly giving the Guantanamo naval facility back to Cuba. I mean, there's a long list. And I think we are in desperate need in this country of real leadership internationally, to protect ourselves, to protect our friends around the world from the risks they face. And if you don't have that kind of discussion, if everything is focused, as virtually all of the Democratic Party debates have been, simply on domestic issues, the people are going to be deprived of a real ability to judge among the candidates. And that's why I have long argued that the Republican Party really is, of the two parties, it's the only one that's the party of national security. So if there's no debate in the Republican Party, there's not going to be a debate at all. And I think that's very dangerous for the country.
I don't know if you formally endorse, sir, but when you listen to the different answers of the four remaining Republican candidates, which ones impress you most? And perhaps on the flip side, which ones impress you the least?
Well, I haven't endorsed anybody yet. I do think I don't rule it out. It's possible that that I will before the convention at Cleveland. But what I've spent my time doing is trying to be available to anybody, any of the candidates who want to talk to me. I don't talk about it publicly myself. Obviously, we're down to a much smaller number of candidates than when we started out. We had 17 originally. But I think just trying to be a forum where they can talk about their ideas and whatnot, any help I can be. I think that's my contribution for the moment, and then we'll see as we get a little bit further along here whether I go beyond that.
I know one of the candidates mentioned, I don't know if it was in a debate or a town hall, that if not you, someone like you would be a great Secretary of State. We'll move on to the Democrats here. And it was just a couple of nights ago with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders where a couple of different foreign policy issues came up for each one. For Hillary Clinton, there was pretty intense questioning about the security of her email system, as well as her response to the families of the Benghazi victims when she blamed a video and when emails immediately after the attack suggested that she admitted that it was terrorism. She says it's the fog of war, new intelligence coming in, and that sort of thing. And so the story changed and that she wasn't actually being misleading. What did you make of her responses in those areas?
Well, I thought they were totally inadequate. And, you know, speaking of Secretary of State, it's an honor to be mentioned. Hillary Clinton's only qualification to be president, arguably, is her tenure as Secretary of State. So that is going to be right at the center, I think, of the examination during the general election campaign. And in Benghazi, I think she demonstrated nothing less than cowardice, leaving the State Department while Libya and our people there were still very much in jeopardy, unable or unwilling to go on the Sunday talk shows, sending out the hapless Susan Rice to try to peddle this story about the Mohammed video. She never talked to the Secretary of Defense on the day of the attacks. She talked to the president once, and that was to talk about the press release mentioning the Mohammed video. I mean, it's just a dereliction of duty, really, to see your people in danger, not just in Libya, but potentially all around the Middle East, and to go home. It sends a signal within the bureaucracy that the secretary doesn't care enough to stay at her desk late into the night, if need be, until all Americans were accounted for. And in terms of the email, honestly, if she didn't have the wit to protect her own email as Secretary of State, how's she going to protect the country as president?
Let's move to Bernie Sanders. And the issue that came up was comments he made in a video more than 30 years ago regarding Cuba and saying at that time, well, President Reagan might not like the Cubans very much, but the Cuban people don't seem to be rising up in rebellion at this point. When asked about the video now, he says, well, sure, Cuba's authoritarian. We'd love to see it move towards a democracy, but they're still doing great things in terms of health care and education and some other areas. So what did you make of him being at worst balanced and in some ways very positive towards the Castros?
Look, it shows what an astoundingly left-wing radical this man still is at an age when common sense normally begins to descend on people. It's clear that the Castros have taken Obama's surrender to their demands to give them full diplomatic recognition, which he did, to visit their country. And not only are they not lessening the repression of dissidents, they're putting more dissidents in jail on balance than they're releasing, so that the political climate in Cuba since our recognition has gotten more repressive. I think everybody sees that except the White House and Bernie Sanders. That's why I think it's so important to get a sensible Republican into the White House and why the cost of missing this opportunity for the country is so high.
Just a couple minutes left here with Ambassador John Bolton. And, sir, in terms of news that just broke this week, we had a double whammy with Iran. We found out from the head of the IAEA, the UN weapons inspectors, that they're not allowed to report any violations of the Iranians under the new nuclear deal. At the same time, we found out they've tested ballistic missiles, which, as far as anyone can tell, is not really mentioned in the nuclear deal. So what's your takeaway from those two stories this week?
Well, I think it's an interesting confluence of events. I think the Iranian Ayatollahs have nothing but contempt for President Obama and his administration, and by inference, the country as a whole. This revelation that the International Atomic Energy Agency thinks now it's supposed to report less on Iran's activities even stunned the administration. And they've now said, well, actually, that's not the way we interpret the agreement. I just think it may be too late. The administration's not going to endanger. It's what it sees as its biggest accomplishment of the second term counterpart to Obamacare in the first term. They're not going to risk that coming apart over, you know, something like transparency and disclosure or compliance by Iran. And the missile launches, I think, are demonstrate contempt both for Israel and the United States, and they reflect the weakness and shoddy negotiating of the American side in the nuclear deal, and reflect just one example of the price we're going to pay for this diplomatic catastrophe for years to come.
Very quick follow-up on that before the final question. Do you expect the UN to do anything about this?
I don't expect them to do anything. I think it needs to be the United States continuing to raise it. But honestly, we're not going to fix this disaster until we get a new president.
Last topic, the Middle East was probably the most was the topic that took up the most time in the Republican debate on Thursday night. And the debate, of course, came down to Donald Trump saying that the American president has to be a neutral party in Israeli and Palestinian negotiations. Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz took a very, very different tack, saying we have to stand on the side of Israel. John Kasich saying peace talks might even be a waste of time because we're never going to get anywhere. So where do you come down on that, and what did you make of those positions that were held?
No, I think, look, if the United States doesn't stand with Israel, nobody else is. Israel's part of the West. They're our closest ally in the region. We have extraordinarily close political and economic and military ties with them. That needs to continue. That doesn't mean we can't try and find a way to get peace between Israel and the Palestinians. But believe me, we've got 1,000 problems in the region now as it descends into chaos, really, across North Africa and the Middle East over to Afghanistan and Pakistan. And there are a lot of things that need to be done, dealing with Iran's nuclear program, dealing with ISIS, dealing with al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups. They're going to take a lot of time and attention that really, if the president has time to deal with the Israeli-Palestinian issue in his first couple of years in office, I'll be surprised.
Mr. Ambassador, as always, good to have you with us. Thanks for your time today.
Well, thanks again for having me.
Former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, now with the American Enterprise Institute. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.